offering a most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Hari, but today also joining us once again is Brother Pradeep from the Shri Satya Sai Central Trust. For those of you who joined us last week, you'll know that we began a new discourse last week, and this was the 11th discourse that Swami gave as part of the 1991 Summer Course series. The discourse delivered on 31st of May, 1991. And it's indeed such a great pleasure to be able to revisit this discourse after as many years. And as we had mentioned last time, this discourse is one of those which are definitely tougher in the syllabus compared to the other ones. But each discourse is beautiful in its own way as we are exploring, as we are going through this. This discourse is about the three forms of God. That is what the title of the discourse itself suggests. So before going into what Swami had spoken last week and before we go into the clip for this week, let me invite Brother Pradeep and Brother Hari to join all of us.
Saranam.
So I think, Hari, you were saying that this is precisely from the again, Taittiriya Upanishad, but the Anandavalli.
The previous discourse was almost exclusively Shikshavalli, so the instructions that the teacher has been giving the students at towards the end of their stay in the in the ashram. And so the lot of instruction over there has to do with how do you conduct yourself according to dharma, the principles of dharma, etc. And moving on to this discourse, right at the beginning, the beginning section has to deal with the Anandavalli.
Okay.
And the section we'll be dealing with today comes from another Upanishad. But like how Swami at the beginning of last discourse, he spoke about how, you know, the hierarchy of, you have Akasha, and from the Akasha you have Vayu, then Tejas, that is representing fire. Then you have Prithvi, right? And so these are the stages in which, and these are explored in the Anandavalli. So the how is one to attain bliss? Like, so we spoke about how the Anandavalli says that you take, even on earth, if you take a young person with complete health and all commanding all the wealth of the world, you call that as one unit of happiness. So Brahmanandam is like several orders, right? Mm. You go through almost 10 lokas before you can even speak about what the Brahmananda is. So that is what essentially the Anandavalli talks about. So that was the initial part of the discourse, right? So one important thing that Swami had said, which is important for us to note, is that Brahmavidya is not something that is beyond human understanding. And so what is the access? Because as we know, it is something that is beyond the access of the mind. So what Swami has said, that it consists of very simple practices in daily life. That was the biggest takeaway for us from the last segment. That what Brahmanandam, the Brahmavidya is something that we traditionally regard as being inaccessible. But Swami has said that what it consists of is to practice it. Like, so assume, like axiomatically assume that you are already divine, that you are one with the Brahman, and then conduct yourself according to that in daily life. That is what was the Shikshavali, in fact. So the precepts of dharma, etc., to practice that, one must have that conviction that one is the divinity itself. Otherwise you are always going to be fooled with that notion that you are an individual who needs to survive, who needs to do things in order to survive, right? As against, so you will almost naturally, you're going to transgress dharma if that is what your standpoint is. So that essentially Swami is saying that you take, hold it as a truth, as a sacrosanct truth, that you are divinity itself, and then practice, conduct, see what it does to various areas of your life, see what that implies for how you act, talk, behave.
I recall a conversation we had with Venkatraman sir, you know, when we were doing something relating to Swami's Ceiling on Desires program. So he raised this question, why does Swami want us to have Ceiling on Desires? So we were thinking of different answers. We were giving environmental reasons.
Right.
And, you know, even philosophically, you know, it's better for us to have lesser desires and all of that. So he said, see, these are all our points of view. The main reason why Swami wants us to be having desires under control is by nature we are desireless.
Mm.
He said, that is our nature. From Swami's point of view, that is the view.
Yes.
No, from our point of view, we say that, yeah, I mean, I can live within my means. Yeah, I can serve the society better if I'm able to see, have a ceiling on my desires. But from Swami's point of view, your nature is to be desireless, and this is only a means of achieving that. Right?
Yes.
And that is a perspective that Swami is starting this discourse with. As you're saying, he says, the Brahman gave forth the Akasha, and the Akasha gave forth the other elements.
Mm-hmm.
And going by that simple logic, the human being is essentially divine.
Right.
Right. So it is all about going back to that idea.
Yeah, actually, main reason why Swami emphasized we should have a ceiling on desires is that because of desire, mind become extrovert. It start pursuing the sense object.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have desire, mind become introvert. Unless you are introvert, you cannot know Brahma Vidya. So,
right.
If you want to know Brahman, there is no other way except you have to withdraw from the everything, all objects,
mm-hmm.
and withdraw. That is the way,
right.
The reason why we always emphasize.
Mm-hmm. No.
In fact, in one conversation, the Divine Master Nisargadatta Maharaj,
mm-hmm.
in a conversation with a disciple, he invites the disciple to look at the Bhagavad Gita in a different way. See, normally we look at Bhagavad Gita as a conversation between Arjuna and Krishna. So, as human beings, we tend to adopt the standpoint of Arjuna, right,
mm.
that there is something to be learned here, and
mm.
so we are listening to those instructions. So he says, like, why don't you adopt this viewpoint that you are Krishna delivering the Gita? So when you are reading the verses of the Gita, stand in the place of Krishna and deliver it. Like,
right.
So then that conviction, you know, that you are that Atma which cannot be sliced mm. by a sword and
right.
drowned in water and burned by fire. So when you make that statement, that is something that kindles the truth in you. Right. So he
right.
says, you adopt that standpoint directly
mm-hmm.
when you are studying or reciting the verses mm-hmm. of the Gita.
I think I'd mentioned this earlier once. We have one of our research scholars who did a PhD on leadership in Mahabharata.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And Swami would often pull him up and ask him to speak something on the Mahabharata and all of that. So in Kodai, Swami had asked him to speak. Right. So after his speech, Swami asked him, so who is the hero of the Mahabharata?
Mm.
Okay. And very spontaneously he said, Swami, Arjuna.
Mm.
Swami said, see, this is what you've learned. You're doing research and you're saying Arjuna.
Mm.
And Swami said, no, always Krishna is the hero.
Mm.
Right? Now, when you look at it, and from what you were quoting from Nisargadatta Maharaj, you know, whenever we see a movie or we read a story, we read a novel, we relate to the hero character more than any of the supporting characters
yes.
in the thing.
Yes.
You know, we, at least it's meant to be that way. When you read a story, you're supposed to see the story from the viewpoint of the protagonist.
Mm.
Right? And I think that is the essence when Swami says Krishna is the hero, and read the story with the idea that Krishna is the hero, so that you will look at the whole thing from his standpoint, and as you're saying, even the Bhagavad Gita, you will read it from his standpoint rather than the confused state in which Arjuna was.
Yes, exactly. Right? Because then the verses of the Bhagavad Gita just become assertions or declarations.
What
it's like
already
how,
are.
If you actually read the other, you know, like we got the Avadhuta Gita, etc., they're like literally declarations.
Mm-hmm.
They're already in that standpoint of that I'm already divine.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So how, why will something say sorrow, why will it affect me?
Right.
Like, so those are the, like it asks as if they are like ridiculous questions to pose.
Mm-hmm.
So, because the, whoever is reciting the verse is already standing in that place called I'm Brahman or I'm divine. There's
mm-hmm.
no doubt in their minds.
Mm-hmm. I think Swami knew that we are going to be talking so much about Brahma Vidya. That's why he started with the Padyam saying that, you know, having studied Brahma Vidya, there are many who preach about it,
yes.
but there are very few actually who practice it. And, you know, that is again the beauty of Swami's discourses. Every time he starts a discourse with that idea of, you know, Brahman or ultimate, eventually it comes down to, towards the end, it will always come down to unity of thought, word, and deed, being good. And doing,
respecting
parents and loving others. Because that is essentially the way you practice it.
Mm.
You know, Swami would, I think that beautiful conversation between Dr. Hislop and Swami, where Hislop asks Swami that, how do I know that I'm, you know, progressing or I've reached the ultimate state? And Swami is saying, you will be able to emote with everybody whom you see.
Mm-hmm.
You will be able to relate to their pain, you will be able to relate to their joy.
Right.
Just like it's your own. Right. And I think we'll go to the next clip, and if anything else we've missed out, probably we can add after that also.
Sure.
తైత్తిరీయ ఉపనిషత్తునందు విద్యార్థులకు అధ్యాపకులు బోధించినటువంటి ఈ శిక్షావల్లి యొక్క ప్రమాణము, శిక్షావల్లి యొక్క సారము, ఈ విధమైనటువంటి బ్రహ్మానంద ప్రాప్తిని పొందే నిమిత్తమే ప్రబోధిస్తూ వచ్చారు.
ఇన్ తైత్తిరీయ ఉపనిషత్ దిస్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ రిలేషన్షిప్, దిస్ మెథడ్ ఆఫ్ ఎక్వైరింగ్ బ్రహ్మానందం ఈజ్ టాట్ టు స్టూడెంట్స్ బై టీచర్స్.
బ్రహ్మ విద్య అనగా,
ది బ్రహ్మ విద్య మెంట్
కేవలము మానవాతీతమైనటువంటి విద్య కాదు.
ఇట్స్ నాట్ మియర్లీ ద ట్రాన్సెండెంటల్ నాలెడ్జ్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్.
నిత్య జీవితంలో సత్య మార్గాన్ని గడిపేటువంటి, వ్యక్తిత్వాన్ని పోషించేటువంటి సహజమైనటువంటి యొక్క సాధనలే.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ద వన్ టేకెన్ ఇన్ డైలీ లైఫ్, ద లైఫ్ ఆఫ్ ట్రూత్ విచ్ హ్యాస్ టు బి ప్రాక్టీస్డ్ ఇన్ డైలీ లైఫ్.
ఇట్టి సాధనా సంపత్తిని మానవుడు దినదినాభివృద్ధి చేసుకోవాలి.
సచ్ స్పిరిచువల్ ప్రాక్టీస్ మ్యాన్ షుడ్ డెవలప్ గ్రాడ్యువల్లీ.
దీనికి ఈ బ్రహ్మతత్వములకు అనగా అనంతమైనటువంటి తత్వములకు మూడు విధములైనటువంటి రూపంలో నిరూపిస్తూ వచ్చింది ఉపనిషత్తు.
ఉపనిషత్ డెమాన్స్ట్రేటెడ్ త్రీ ఫార్మ్స్ టు బ్రహ్మిక్ నేచర్.
విరాట్టుడు అని, హిరణ్య గర్భుడు అని, అవ్యాయకృతుడు అని.
ద వన్ ఈజ్ విరాట్టుడు, ద సెకండ్ హిరణ్య గర్భుడు, ద థర్డ్ వన్ ఈజ్ అవ్యాకృత.
ఈ మూడు రూపములు కూడాను స్థూల సూక్ష్మ కారణములకు సంబంధించినటువంటివి.
These three are related to grass, subtle and causal factors.
Jagrat, Swapna, Sushupthito Cherinatuntimi.
They contain the waking state, the dreaming state and the deep sleep state.
Virattudu anaga,
Virattudu meant
Bhautika Shariramuto,
with physical body,
Kevalamu తాను దీర్ఘాయుష్మంతుడిగా ఉండి,
లీడింగ్ ఎ లాంగ్ లైఫ్,
తాను ఒక స్థూలమైనటువంటి యొక్క స్వరూపాన్ని ధరించి,
హీ అస్యూమ్స్ ఎ గ్రాస్ ఫామ్,
జాగ్రత్త అవస్థ స్వరూపుడైన ఆత్మతత్వమే విరాట స్వరూపుడు.
హీ ఎంజాయ్స్ ద వేకింగ్ స్టేట్, హీస్ విరాట స్వరూప.
చెప్పటం లేదు, చాలా డిఫికల్టీ. ఈ జాగ్రత్త అవస్థ స్వరూపుడైనటువంటి ఆత్మతత్వమునకే విరాట స్వరూపుడు అని పేరు.
ది ఆత్మిక్ నేచర్ ఇన్ వేకింగ్ స్టేట్ ఈజ్ కాల్డ్ విరాట స్వరూప.
ఇతను నానా రూపములను ధరించి,
హీ అస్యూమ్స్ వేరియస్ ఫార్మ్స్,
నానా నామములతో,
విత్ వేరియస్ నేమ్స్
ప్రకటితమవుతుంటాడు.
ఎక్స్ప్రెసెస్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్
అనగా అచరాచర ప్రపంచమంతయు కూడాను.
ఇట్ మీన్స్ ద మూవబుల్ అండ్ ఇమ్మూవబుల్ వరల్డ్.
తన యొక్క రూపంగా నిరూపించి,
ప్రూవ్స్ యాజ్ ఇట్స్ ఓన్ మేనిఫెస్టేషన్.
ఆకాశాది పంచభూతములను కూడాను,
రైట్ ఫ్రమ్ ద స్కై ఆల్ ద ఫైవ్
తన రూపములుగా నిరూపించి,
ప్రూవింగ్ యాజ్ ఇట్స్ ఓన్ ఫామ్.
త్రిపీలకాది బ్రహ్మ పర్యంతము కూడాను తన రూపములుగా నిరూపించి,
right from ant to brahma are proved as its own.
Sarvam vishwaswarupam anetvanti yokka sthiti ki taru raavatam chetane ataniki virata swarupudu unnaru.
As he comes to the state that entire universe he is his own self, therefore he is called virata swarupudu.
Anaga kondalu, guttalu, nadulu, parvatamulu, samudramu, సర్వ దృశ్య కల్పితమైనటువంటి జగత్ అంతా కూడాను విరాట స్వరూపమే.
మీనింగ్ ద విరాట స్వరూప ఇన్క్లూడ్స్ ఆల్ దోస్ విచ్ ఆర్ అపారెంట్, ద హిల్స్, ద మౌంటైన్స్.
ఇది అది అనేటువంటి భేదములు లేకుండా ఏది కనిపించునో అదంతా విరాట స్వరూపం యొక్క అంశములే.
there is no distinction such as this and that. All that which is apparent is Virata Swarupa.
కనుక విరాటుడు అనగా బాహ్య జగత్తులకు సంబంధించి స్థూలమైనటువంటి జగత్స్వరూపాన్ని ధరించి తాను ఈ జగత్తులకు ఆదర్శాన్ని అందించేటువంటిది.
విరాటుడు మెంట్ దట్ విచ్ ఇస్ ఎక్స్టర్నల్ హ్యాస్ గాట్ దిస్ గ్రాస్ ఫామ్ అండ్ డెమోన్స్ట్రేట్స్ ఐడియల్ టు ద వరల్డ్.
ఇతనికి మరి రెండు పేర్లు ఉంటున్నాయి.
హీ హ్యాస్ టూ అదర్ నేమ్స్.
రెండవది వైశ్వానరుడు అని.
ద సెకండ్ వన్ ఈజ్ వైశ్వానర.
వైశ్వానరుడు అనగా ప్రతి వ్యక్తి ఎందు కూడాను నేను నేను అనేటువంటి యొక్క పదము చేత నిరూపించినటువంటి వాడు.
వైశ్వానర ఈజ్ వన్ హూ ప్రూవ్స్ ద ఐ ఇన్ ఎవ్రీ ఇండివిజువల్.
రాజు మొదలు రైతు వరకు.
రైట్ ఫ్రమ్ కింగ్ టు ద ఫార్మర్.
భిక్షగాని మొదలు శ్రీమంతుని వరకు.
ఫ్రమ్ బెగర్ టు రిచ్ మ్యాన్.
బాలుడి మొదలు వృద్ధుని వరకు.
ఫ్రమ్ బాయ్ టు ఎన్ ఓల్డ్ మ్యాన్.
స్త్రీ మొదలు పురుషుని వరకు.
ఉమన్ టు ఎ మ్యాన్.
తనను తాను పరిచయం కావించుకునేటువంటి ప్రతి వ్యక్తి కూడాను నేను నేను అనేటువంటి పదమును ఉపయోగపెడుతున్నాడు.
ద వన్ హూ ఇంట్రడ్యూస్ వన్స్ ఓన్ సెల్ఫ్ హీ సేస్ ఐ ఐ. హీ యూజెస్ దట్ వర్డ్ ఐ.
తనను తాను ఇంట్రడ్యూస్ చేసుకునే సమయంలో ఐ అనేటువంటిది ఉపయోగపెడతాడు.
వెన్ హీ ఇంట్రడ్యూసెస్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ హీ యూజెస్ దిస్ వర్డ్ ఐ ఐ.
కాబట్టి నేను అనేటువంటి పదము సర్వజీవులు యందు ఉంటున్నది.
సో దిస్ వర్డ్ ఐ ఈస్ ప్రెసెంట్ ఇన్ ఆల్ బీయింగ్స్.
సర్వజీవులు యందు కూడాను నేను నేను అనేటువంటి పదమును ఉచ్చరించేటువంటి వాడే వైశ్వానరుడు.
వైశ్వానర ఈజ్ వన్ హూ అటర్స్ దిస్ వర్డ్ ఐ ఐ ఇన్ ఎవ్రీ బీయింగ్.
ఇంకా మూడవ పేరు.
ద థర్డ్ నేమ్
వైరాజసుతుడు అని పేరు.
ద థర్డ్ నేమ్ వైరాజసుతుడు.
వైరాజసుతుడు, విశ్వానరుడు, విరాటుడు ఈ మూడు కూడాను ఒక్కరి యొక్క వివిధ నామములే.
వైరాజసుతుడు, వైశ్వానరుడు, విరాటుడు ఆర్ ద త్రీ నేమ్స్ ఆఫ్ ద సేమ్ వన్.
వైరాజసుతుడు అనగా
వైరాజసుతుడు మెంట్
తాను ఒక విచిత్రమైనటువంటి స్వరూపము ధరించినటువంటి వాడు.
హీ అస్యూమ్స్ ఎ మిస్టీరియస్ ఫామ్.
అందరి యందు ఉండి కూడాను
దో ఎగ్జిస్టింగ్ ఇన్ ఎవ్రీ వన్
తాను లేనట్టుగా.
యాజ్ ఇఫ్ హీస్ నాట్ దేర్
అన్ని పనులు చేస్తూ.
అండర్ టేక్స్ ఆల్ యాక్షన్స్
తాను చేయనట్టుగా.
వితౌట్ యాజ్ ఇఫ్ హీస్ నాట్ డూయింగ్
అన్నింటినీ అనుభవిస్తూ.
ఎక్స్పీరియన్సింగ్ ఎవ్రీ
తాను అనుభవించినట్టుగా.
యాజ్ ఇఫ్ హీస్ నాట్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్సింగ్
ఈ విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క
సచ్ ఎ సార్ట్ ఆఫ్
రూపమును ధరించినటువంటి వాడు కనుకనే ఇదనికి వైరాజసుతుడు అని.
సచ్ ఎ సార్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఫామ్ ఈజ్ అస్యూమ్డ్ అండ్ హెన్స్ ఈజ్ కాల్డ్ వైరాజసుతుడు.
ఇది విరాట స్వరూపుని యందు మూడు భాగములుగా ఏర్పడిన అంతరార్థములు.
దిస్ ఈజ్ ది ఇన్నర్ సిగ్నిఫికెన్స్ ఇన్ హ్యావింగ్ దీస్ త్రీ ఫార్మ్స్.
దట్ వాస్ ది నెక్స్ట్ క్లిప్ అండ్ ఐ థింక్ ఇట్స్ short trailer of what is there to come. But one thing which was so striking in that clip was Swami was whispering to Anil Kumar sir, saying that slow down, slow down, this is not an easy topic. So I think Swami kind of understands our predicament and he says it's yes. So slow down, it's quite complicated. But again, Swami starts off by saying that Brahma Vidya is within the grasp of the human understanding.
Mm.
And because in another discourse in the same series, Swami was saying, when he was talking about how man progressively understood nature and from nature the aspect of God and then the nature of God and beyond. So Swami says that at no point should you give up thinking that I will not be able to understand this.
Right.
Swami said, how many sages have understood this? Draw your confidence from them. They were also human beings like you. They have understood it, so you have to be confident that even you can understand it.
Right.
And Swami said that if you don't have that confidence, you're not going to try at all. Right? So I think that is where we have to start from.
Yeah.
And then of course Swami goes on to speak about the nature of Brahman, or you know, the various aspects of Brahman. So Swami says there are three names by which Brahman is elaborated on in the Upanishads: the Virata, the Hiranyagarbha, and Avyakrita. Right. So this clip was about the Virata. Right.
Yeah. In fact, if I'm not wrong, like this, this is a discussion that takes place in the Mandukya Upanishad. So where we, so the Mandukya, in fact, Swami is also mentioning this. He says that these three forms which Swami mentions, that is Virata, Hiranyagarbha and Avyakrita, these three forms relate to the gross, subtle and the causal states.
Right, right. That's so, what Swami is saying.
Yes. So in the Mandukya Upanishad, this is elaborated in great detail. So there they speak about first the states of consciousness.
Mm.
So that those what we know as the, you know, the
Jagrata,
Jagrata, then
Vishwa, Tejasa.
Yes, Tejasa and Sushupti. So these and Turiya, the four states of consciousness. So corresponding to these, we have the what is called as the forms of the Atma.
Mm.
So in each level of consciousness, you have
how you can
a manifestation. Yes, a manifestation of the Atma. So that is what. So in the just a very basic like an understanding of what is being spoken about here. So in the first, when in the Jagrata state, what the manifestation of Atma that we see is the Virat Swarupa.
Right.
And then when we move to the, shall we call it the inward looking state. So the outwardly looking state is the physical, you know, we, the senses are all drawn outward at the time of when you are completely awake, right, physically awake. And then when you proceed to the sleeping state or the dreaming state, so there the senses are now like inward. Right? So in that state, the manifestation of Atma that we see, so that is the Hiranyagarbha, like a potent. So then beyond this we have the Avyakrita, like in the sleeping or the sleeping
deep sleep state.
When all the
manifest.
Yeah, the senses are all dormant, and as we saw in a previous discourse, it is the pranas that are still active, right? So in that state, the in fact in the Upanishad, I think it's referred to as Ishvara itself.
Yes.
The all-knowing one. You know, that is the state. So what I found interesting is that all of these are talking about the same person. The same individual, like as a person, he experiences, and the like the Lord in or the Atma in that state is the Virata, right? And finally, like when everything is withdrawn, the desires, everything has subsided, the person, the so-called person, is now the Lord himself. In deep sleep, the Upanishad, if I understand, is saying that that is the Lord himself.
Right.
And finally, like beyond all this, right, there is just pure consciousness. And finally, even that sense of like being the Lord of it all, even the all-knowing, all everything has ceased. In that time, we merely have pure consciousness. So that is the, so the Upanishads, the Mandukya Upanishad talks of this correspondence between the states of consciousness and the state of the Atma itself.
Right. Right.
According to Upanishads, there is only one fundamental entity which is imperishable, unoriginated, which is not compounded, which is not involved in creation or creator. This fundamental entity exists as supercausal plane, which is neither a cause nor an effect. Upanishad calls this entity as a Brahman. It is absolute. You cannot say it is manifest, it is not unmanifest, sat or asat. So this entity exists. This is not a void existence, or as a shunya. It is not a shunya entity. Shunyavadin say it is a shunya. It is not a void existence. It is a conscious entity, and Upanishads are very emphatically say this is, if this is a conscious entity, it is not a void existence.
Right.
The one who considers this is a void becomes non-existence. So this entity exists a supercausal plane. There is a consciousness which abides in him, in a static state. Brahman, through his deliberation, creates a creative idea through his willpower, deliberation. And he projects those knowledge, whatever there ingrained in his awareness, and brings out a unmanifest state which is called avyakta.
Mm.
Avyakta or avyakata, both are same. Why it's called? Because unmanifest.
Mm.
There, no creation has taken place, no effect has come into existence. Just it is a cause. Lot of intelligence has created what we call as gods.
Mm.
So you see, this Brahman is even beyond all gods. And as you said, Brahman can be known. There, what when we discuss in Upanishad, they say there is one part of Brahman which can be known, mm. manifest aspect can be mm. known, but which is beyond unmanifest, which is eto vato nivartante aptapya manasa saha. It is not possible for anybody to comprehend. Swami has said in other discourses also, it is absolutely impossible for anybody to say he is a knower Brahman, mm. because Brahman cannot be known as an object, subject relationship.
Right.
We say we know this object because we are different and that object is different.
Mm.
But that state when comes, when there is no difference between object and subject, and even there is no even knowledge also is merged in the absolute state, a person can become Brahman, but he cannot know it.
Know it.
Brahmit Brahmai Bhavati.
Right.
But like Ramakrishna Paramahansa used to state that when a person reaches there, he cannot come and explain to you how he experienced. He experiences, no doubt about it. So there is one part of Brahman which can be known, but there is one part of which is beyond unmanifest, avikrita state.
Right.
Nobody can know it.
Right.
Then subsequent that avikrita follows the Hiranyagarbha state. When there is a, in avikrita state there is a consciousness in a nirvikalpa state, mean undifferentiated. But in Hiranyagarbha state it becomes differentiated. So there is a difference between Hiranyagarbha and avyakata.
Mm.
There is no effect there, only its cause is there. In Hiranyagarbha, effect slowly starts. And it starts with the golden color of light manifest.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it is called an oval shape. So it is called Hiranyagarbha, golden abrev.
Mm.
And this effect, further panchikaranam process starts.
Mm.
Further it becomes gross and becomes Virat Sarupa.
Mm.
So this is how creation has started, and Vedic seers are very clear that there could not be any non-conscious entity who can be the cause of creation.
Creation.
It is only conscious entity can resolve, can do tapas, can bring out gods and bring out all those whatever inherent in his consciousness and bring out a gross universe.
Mm.
So that, now, in Mandukya Upanishad, what is said, Mandukya says, this microcosm is same as macrocosm. I am Atma Brahma. Whatever individual soul is there, same thing is Brahma. He is really no different from that. So it tries to correlate. See, you are experiencing four states. First, means we are experiencing only three states. Fourth is, of course, beyond comprehension.
Right.
When we see gross state, it is called Vishwa, or simply Vaswanara or Vishwa, both are same. Then when we go to dream state, we see as a sort of a tejasa, effulgent sort of a thing. So dream state. And then deep sleep state, there are no senses, no mind, but we exist. Because when we come from the deep sleep, we say, I had very sound sleep I had. Even though there was no mind, there was no senses, but there is something witnessing it. So that's why that is the true Atma. And that is the witness of all states. Vishwa, Vaishvanara, Vaishva, Tejasa and Pragya. He is a witness in all the three states. So what we say is, Virata is that gross creation who is a witness of all what is in the waking state. And of course everything is a gross, but he is not that. He is in beyond that. He is just witness of that. Similarly, Hiranyagarbha is that who illuminates the dream state, or he is a witness in the dream state. And Pragya is even witness of the deep sleep state.
Okay.
What is the difference between Pragya and Hiranyagarbha is that Pragya is the cause of creation.
Mm-hmm.
He is said to be Lord of the creation. Everything comes, originate and dissolves in him. So he is called Ishvara.
Mm-hmm.
Hiranyagarbha is also a Lord, but he is Lord in the sense he controls the life and death of the people. He comprises cosmic prana.
Mm-hmm.
So he controls the life and death of people. That's why he is called also Lord, but he is lower than state of avyakata state.
Right.
So when we go from slowly from Virat to Hiranyagarbha, when we enter into avyakata state, we gets totally changed, because whatever mind was there, it used to think, it gets turned into a different type of experience. It is no longer whatever we experience in waking state, dream state, it totally gets transformed into a different state.
Mm.
So Pragya also is called inexpressible, anivachanya, which cannot be described, but is experienced.
Mm.
So up to the Hiranyagarbha state, we have mind and intellect, but in state of avyakta, there is no intellect also. Intellect merges this cause called Mahat.
Right. I think as the name itself suggests, vyakti means that individual. So avyakta is where you are not present as a separate individual to experience that state.
Yes.
Brother Pradeep, I had like one query to ask you. So in the Purusha Sukta also we find reference to this Virat. So the specific phrase is Tasmaad Virada Jayata.
Correct.
But prior to that there is description of the Purusha. So in fact it is said that Tripada Syamritam Divi. So they're describing the Purusha, and the Purusha occupies like, so we see only 1/4 of that Purusha, and from this Purusha is born the Virat. And so how do we correlate the Purusha and the Virat?
No, there is only one Purusha as per Kathopanishad. Avyakta para Purusha. Mahat para avyakta, avyakta para Purusha. Mahat means Hiranyagarbha state. Beyond that is avyakta, beyond that is Purusha, supreme Purusha. So difference is that when Purushottama speaks of this Purusha, it is different from the supreme Purusha. He is, after that so many other Purusha come. It is Viraj Purusha, it is called Viraj Purusha. It is different from the absolute supreme Purusha. So that's why the difference is there.
Right.
I think that's what Swami is mentioning. The third name is Virajasuta, which is still in the gross state. It is still not in the higher realms.
Actually, Nasadiya Sukta speaks of the absolute start. There was no Sat, there was no Sat. So that is supreme Purusha.
I see. Okay.
So, but here it is spoken of from Viraj Purusha comes Virat.
Okay. Okay. In fact, as you were describing, like Swami is saying over here that who Virat is a person, is a being that asserts that Sarvam Vishwasarupam, like all is my form. How the Buddhists say, we are one with everything. So that ideal, so Sarvam Vishwasarupam. And I was just thinking like how Swami used to really like this one poem, that the Lord is literally somebody who's got the welfare of all beings in mind. And Swami says the reason is because I am present in the Lord is present in all the beings, right? So that's why that concern is always there. Like, so, in fact, Swami used to refer to this one small song which is composed by the Saint Purandara Dasa, in which he mentions that who is that person who takes care of that frog, you know, up in the hill, which is sitting inside a rock. It's so totally inaccessible to everybody. Like, no being can reach that frog. It's living inside that rock. But when you break open the rock, out emerges the frog which has been alive since ages, right? So, how does that frog live? Like, so Swami used to ask. And I recall one alumni who was describing, you know, when he had the fortune of accompanying Swami to Kodaikanal. So on the return journey back from Kodaikanal to Madurai, everyone else, I'm talking about the days when Swami used to take the students by bus. You know, so all the other students were asked to go and sit in the bus. Whereas this one student, he was told, you go and sit in one car, like one of the cars that was in the convoy. And he was very dismayed by this, because he knew that always, you know, on the trip, Swami would find an opportunity to get into the bus. And he felt, I would miss this opportunity. So, as the journey was going on, at some point of time suddenly, the bus continued ahead and Swami's convoy, it took a detour. And they went into somewhere in the woods, some strange place. Nobody had an inclination why Swami has, you know, asked for the convoy to turn off the route. So they go deep inside, and you know, the student becomes very excited, thinking that, oh, now we're going to have a picnic which was unscheduled and like a special blessing altogether. So they stop at a particular place, and when he comes out of the car, he sees that there are tribals who are gathered around the car. And out there, with one small little photograph of Swami which is put on one branch of a tree, they're all waiting for Swami to come there and bless them. And Swami has an impromptu bhajan session over there with these tribals. And he says that he can never forget that scene, you know, because he kept thinking that there is no mode of communication between these tribals and Bhagwan. There's no physical access. And how did they know that Swami would be coming there? And how did Swami know that, you know, these people somewhere in some remote hill in that place, that they are waiting for him? He says he has never been able to resolve that mystery in his mind. But that just shows, like, you know, how the Lord and his devotee, right, there, that connection which is beyond the physical, which tells us that there's a truth beyond our understanding, which says that Sarvam Vishwa Sarupam, like how a being that is supposedly encapsulated in a 3 foot you know, form, like can declare something like that, I am in everyone, I am present in every being. And that we could clearly see, you know, in Swami's life.
You know, talking of Virat, it reminds you of that beautiful interaction between Brother Satyajit and Swami. You know, he always quotes that. And Swami had taken him in the car, and all of a sudden Swami threw a surprise at him, and Swami said, "Kya dekhta hai?" What do you want to see, Swami said. And he said, like, that's a weird question. Swami might sometimes say, ask any question or something like that, but Swami is saying, what do you want to see? So he was a little blank, and then Swami said, no, no, Rama, Krishna, you know, which form do you want to see? Swami asked. And he said, my God, this is like a bumper offer, which has come suddenly. And then he looks at Swami and said, you know, Swami, I would like to see Vishwa Virat Swarupa. He said, all in one, right? You know, you can ask for one by which you can see everything. So he said, Swami, and he was very proud of the request that he put forth to Swami. He said, Swami, I would like to see the Vishwa Virat Swarupa. And instantly, you know, Swami looked out of the window. And we know whenever Swami goes out for a drive, there are people all around. Swami said, Deko. Swami said, see. And he didn't understand what Swami was saying. Swami was saying, look at all of this. Swami said, this is what is Vishwa Virata. Roz dekhta hai, samajhta nahi hai. Swami said. I mean, that's precisely what the Upanishads say. Because in the waking state, as you were saying, in the waking state, all the many forms, it is not like only this or not that, as Swami was saying here, everything that can be seen with your eyes is actually a manifestation of that, and that is what is referred to as Virata. And interestingly, you know, when Sir was explaining the dream state, it again goes to that Hiranyagarbha. I mean, it's not beyond our experience that in a dream state, you know, when we have a dream, let's say that I'm having Hari in my dream, you will notice that in a dream, you not only know your thoughts, but you also know the thoughts of others in your dream. More or less, you have that experience of seeing that scene not purely from our point of view, like in the waking state. You can see it from the point of view of everybody. You sense that this person is thinking like this, that person is afraid, this person is doing like this. So I think that is where in the dream state, actually this separation of yourself from the people around you begins to fade away. Right? And that's what probably they're saying, that body consciousness goes off. I think there is one very famous concept which a lot of neurologists talk of nowadays, that one brain concept. Like they say that initially they thought the brain has two halves, which probably don't communicate much with each other, the left and the right half. And then they realized that even the, you know, brain cells which are very, very farther apart, they seem to be having a way of communicating to each other. So now some of the neurologists are saying that what about this scenario where my brain cells can actually communicate with your brain cells? So he says probably there's only one brain. Probably there's only one thinking brain. And what is stopping me from literally communicating with your brain is this feeling that I am a separate entity.
Mm-hmm.
What we refer to as body consciousness. This feeling that I am this body alone, right?
Yes.
So they're saying that if through a process we can overcome this feeling that I am this body alone, you'll be able to communicate much better with people, even without words, even without them expressing what is happening in their mind. And I think that is what will be that transcendence into that state where you're able to, tejas state of Hiranyagarbha, whatever it is.
Yeah, very clearly, like this, the obsession with being a person is having us miss so much.
Right.
It is like so involved in our, I think all our energies are taken up with just our own thoughts, our concerns, our ambitions and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And so much so that, as you rightly said, we are missing out on so much that is happening right around us. If
mm-hmm.
Swami can say that every day you are witnessing the mm-hmm. Virat Swarupa, and if we can't even if now we are shown that by Bhagwan, if even now we can't feel it, that is a clear sense of like just how much we are missing out on.
Right.
Yeah, you said dream psychology. It is a very complex.
Mm.
Most of the time our dreams are creation of our own. So whatever you see in the waking state, that comes as a dream state.
Mm.
That
right.
is most of the people believe like that.
Mm.
But it is not like that always. There is a higher mind in everybody's nature.
Mm.
If that is active, you get lot of knowledge out of that. Sometimes this mind wants that subconscious, whatever is going to cognition, sort of it foretells, foretells the things what is going to happen.
Mm.
Yes.
So there are various other powers are there in the higher mind.
Mm.
If it is through yoga, if it is activated, discipline, our mind is what you call sense mind is disciplined.
Mm.
It is made totally desireless. Then we develop so many other powers. So that's why when Hari referred to Mandukya Upanishad, it says, the one who knows this state, he becomes a prolific source of knowledge.
Knowledge, yes.
So you derive so much knowledge by seeing somebody in the dream state, you can say he is happy, sad, like that. You derive without any, you don't have any communication, means of communicating to him.
Mm.
So these powers are there, and it is known to many yogis.
Mm.
And again, like when you mentioned the Mandukya Upanishad, the Swami speaks about Vaishvanara, right? And so in the Mandukya Upanishad, the Vaishvanara is described as one having saptanga, the seven limbs, and ekonavimshat mukha, that is to say like 19 mouths. So Vaishvanara could be translated into like the cosmic person.
Mm.
Right, so the cosmic person is described as one having seven limbs and 19 mouths. And, this is the description that is given. Again, in the Mundaka Upanishad, this saptangas, the seven limbs, they have a different way of describing this cosmic person. So they say Agnir Mukha. So they say that the head, the shining regions of the heaven, so those become the head of this cosmic person. Then the sun and the moon, so Chakshushi, Chando, Suryo, right? So the sun and the moon, they become the eyes. Then the directions, Disha, Shrotre, right? So the quarters of the heaven or the quarters of the universe, they become the ears of this cosmic person. Then Vayu, Prana, so the breath becomes the air of this cosmic person. Then Hridayam, Vishwamasya, so the universe is his beating heart. And Padhyam Prithivi, so the earthly our region, the where we inhabit, so that becomes the feet of this cosmic person. So that is so the 19 mouths and this seven limbs. Like, so exactly why do we have to visualize? So this is literally a meditation that is prescribed in the Mandukya Upanishad.
Upanishad always whatever knowledge they impart, it's called Vidya. Vidya means meditation. It is meant for meditating on the Virat Purusha. How will you meditate? Just like you cannot meditate. So you have to meditate as if he has got eyes, he has got pranas, he has got that.
Mm.
But that Purusha, that Virat Purusha is much more than what you can think of heaven, sun, moon. So what is here indicated is you should meditate in so vast entity which is more, these satans just limbs of him.
Mm.
Whose limbs are these? just a meditation. It is not that actually it is like that, but it's just for it's type of meditation is prescribed for the people who are interested in meditating on the gross form of the Brahman.
Right.
So the 19 mouths that are spoken.
19
of,
mouths are like we have 5 Gyanendriya, 5 Karmendriya, 5 Prana, and 4 instrument, Antakarana. Right. 19 mouths.
Right. So as in we take in the world through.
Again,
these,
here it is. Yeah. You know 5 Gyanendriya, Karmendriya.
Mm.
You know 5 Prana. Same thing is you have to meditate on the cosmic form.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Cosmic sense. They are not individual. They are cosmic. Gyanendriya, cosmic karmendriya, then prana, cosmic prana. So it is just a sort of meditation is prescribed so that
and
it's for the beginners, it has to how slowly we have to go from Virata state to Hiranyagarbha state, Hiranyagarbha state to.
So you were mentioning about that in each state you become, Virata becomes a sakshi in the waking state, is it? What was that you were explaining?
Virata is that entity who is the witness of the waking state, in the waking state.
Right. In fact, I mean, even as you're saying that, I was recalling one thing, and that's why I wanted to mention that.
Mm.
Mr. Ajit Popat, once he was mentioning, he was referring to a conversation he had with Swami. Swami was asking him, what is the difference between an acharya and a guru? Swami was asking him, a master and whom you call a guru. So Swami said, acharya siksha deta hai. No? Acharya gives you lessons. Guru diksha deta hai. No, he gives you initiation into whatever is the spiritual path.
Mm.
Swami said, I give you Sakshi Tattva. Swami said, I will give you the state of you being able to witness everything in a detached manner.
Mm.
So literally, I think that is what Swami is trying to egg us towards. But again, it goes back to this. You know, the whole idea of relating the waking state, sleeping state and the deep sleep state, the three things which we can experience with this idea of divinity, I think this itself will happen only when you are able to go within, as you were saying. No, unless you turn within, you will not be able to observe these things happening and correlate it to a divine state.
Right.
And that's what Swami was saying in the previous clip which we played the last week. Swami was saying, unless you go beyond, you know, the anger and the attachment and the fear, you will not be able to go and look within. I mean, if you're not free from what is outside, you will never turn within. In fact, there used to be one Christian person a father used to say this. He said, you know, I am very peaceful, I am very calm. But the moment you bring a plate of sweets in front of me, I lose my freedom. Right? So he says, if that is the level of our freedom, how will we go within?
Right.
You know, it's a very beautiful thing. We all think that I am very peaceful, I am very calm. But we all have things externally which can at any time steal that peace from us.
Right.
And as long as that is our state, probably we'll never turn within. And that is why Swami is saying, you know, the practice of Vedanta starts with all of these things, giving up fear, giving up attachment, giving up immorality, and all of this.
Actually, in Upanishad, always it implies that to attain identity, then only knowledge complete. Without identity, there is no knowledge actually.
Mm.
So whenever we identify ourselves with Virata or Hiranyagarbha or Avyakata.
Okay.
In bliss experience is almost same.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose there is a description of bliss experienced by a sage in the Rigveda. Madhuvata ritayate madhukcharan sindavah matvi santoshati madhuktumatri madhupatakumajah madhorsnapita madhumanno varaspati madhumagam surya. In that says, let whole creation be gross creation what is, let be blissful to me. So that is the experience of identity with the Virata.
Mm-hmm.
That mantra, he is implying that he is experiencing that blissful state, that he finds ocean blissful, wind very calm, soothing. So this is the experience of the person who is in identity with the Virata.
Mm-hmm.
So similarly, Hiranyagarbha also, he experiences bliss. So as for our understanding, there is difference. But when we see from the cosmic level, there is no difference. It's just for understanding purpose, only this differentiation is created.
Nice.
Yeah, because exactly as you are mentioning this, that there is no difference between these
when we
aspects
see from cosmic
of,
plane, there is no difference.
There is no difference. But I was just seeing the marvel of this Mandukya Upanishad is that it is very calmly asserting one fact that when you look at a person, or when you look at yourself, like so no matter what you look like, I mean, or appear to even yourself, in the physical sense, that takes into account everything that you are, your psyche, predilections, what you love, your hate, everything. So it just sets that aside and says, okay, so this is what you are in the gross form, right? And as you progress through, so okay, you have certain kind of dreams when you sleep, and yes, that is given by your mundane existence, all right, you know, but yet when you go beyond that, now you truly are like a step away from consciousness itself, the pure consciousness itself, and it is declaring you as God. You know, when I was reading this, I was so struck, you know, like and for me, the thing was, right, like even when I look at myself, I should hold myself as being that kind of entity, right? And not only that, I was thinking like the people around me. So, like when I look at people around me, the thing is, normally when I look at a person, I associate them with the kind of past, the pleasant or unpleasant experiences that I've had. And I realize that literally I'm dealing with garbage. You know, when I'm talking to a person, I'm dealing with the garbage of that person, and not being able to set that garbage aside and see, you know, or deal with that person as if he were God himself. Mm-hmm. It just gave me some inexplicable joy, you know, when I read that, to see that it is just holding very clearly in a very simple fashion, right? Mm-hmm. That each person is divine. Very simple way of speaking about that.
It reminds me of another conversation, we must have mentioned this before, where one of the journalists who was very skeptical about Swami, who happened to meet Swami in a flight journey. So he walks up to Swami and he says, "Swami, I would like to come and visit you and have a short chat with you." And Swami says, "Yeah, come. I'm going to Hyderabad now. I'll come back to Vrindavan on such and such a day. So you can come to Whitefield, my ashram. I'll meet you." This journalist was quite surprised because Swami was so open. He felt that Swami might behave like very elitist and all that. So that itself was very impressing for him. And then he comes to Vrindavan. I think that person's name is Janardhan Thakur. He later wrote a lot about Swami too. So he comes to Swami and Swami calls him for an interview. And first of all, he was floored by the warmth with which Swami was welcoming him. Swami held his hand and took him inside. And then he asked many questions and Swami gave direct answers for all of those questions. And then he asked this question. He said, "Swami, when you're able to answer all these questions, why don't you answer the press when they speak nonsense about you, right? Because this is the part which is not relevant." But the answer which Swami gave was so beautiful. Swami said, "Those who are below the senses, how will they understand the one who is beyond the senses?" Right? And even in the spiritual journey, even when you're talking about the individual, how will you understand that aspect of you which is beyond the senses,
right,
when you're day in and day out wallowing under the senses, right? So unless you go beyond that, when you're, you know, simplest thing, like I think a couple of discourses back, Swami was saying that when your goodness is not dependent on what you get, what you don't get, on your welfare or on the fears that you have, that's when that goodness is perfect. And that itself suggests that you've actually gone one step above, you know, the pleasures of the body and the senses.
Right. Samatha yoga, you mean to say that you have gone beyond dualities of life.
Right.
Pleasure, pain, sorrow, happiness. Right.
So, again to ask Pradeep brother, because of you're deeply read about these Upanishads, and that is why I keep asking you these questions. Something that I have not been able to parse, why do we have different names like Virat and Vaishwanara? So, we are talking about the same cosmic person. Now, we are talking about even the same state of consciousness, that is Jagrati. And why do we still have like these different names? Why Virat, in my mind, is still the same as the cosmic person. Likewise, there is Vaishwanara, and Swami is speaking about Vairajasuta. So between these three, like what would you, how would you see them as being?
It is spoken differently in different Upanishads. That's all. Ekam sat vipra bahudha bhavanti. That's what I see it.
Okay.
Even some of the Virajasuta Swami said some place it is mentioned as Viraj only.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes Vaishwana is told just Vishwa.
Mm-hmm.
So just a sort of differentiation only in different places, spoken differently.
Because Swami also is like very cryptically only he refers to Vairajasuta. He says that this is one who exists in a mysterious form. And is Swami says exists in everyone but is undetected, performs all actions but behaves as if he does not, experiences everything but does not reveal it. So there's, that's a very oblique.
One probably way of looking at it is when Swami is saying Virata, Swami is saying that it's everything, animate, inanimate. And when Swami is referring to Vaishvanara, I think that is more of, we can relate it to the animate, where Swami is saying that I am. When you say I am, in Swami would say in discourses, when you ask in a crowd, who are you? Somebody would say, I am so and so, I am Ramaya, I am Krishnaya. That I am is constant. So probably the animate aspect of this Virata, which is manifest, comes under what Swami is calling as Vaishvanara. And Swami is saying that the Vairaja Sutta probably is a much larger scope of things that, it covers everything.
Right.
It's probably one way of looking at it from what Swami is saying here, of course, I'm not sure.
Right.
So I think we'll conclude with that. And even as Swami was constantly speaking about Virata, just a couple of weeks back we had played one interview of one of the old students, one of the first batch students of the Vrindavan College. And he was narrating this beautiful incident where Swami was one day relaxing after his lunch. And this boy had the opportunity to do pan seva for Swami, and no one was there. Swami was there, and he was there, and Swami was eating pan, right? So very casually, Swami picked up one pan leaf, and Swami asked me, "What is this?" So he said, "Swami, it's a pan leaf." Then Swami started doing something with the pan leaf, and basically he just made it into an oval shape. And Swami said, "What is this?" So he said, "Swami, it's still a pan leaf. It's oval in shape, right?" And then Swami, in front of him, just blew it and showed it to him. Now what it is? It had become a medallion of the same shape with an enamel in front and a golden frame. And there was an image of Lord Rama. So he said, "Swami, it is Lord Rama." Okay. And then Swami again blew at it. And Swami said, "What is this now?" So he said, "Swami, now it's Krishna." The same medallion, right? And then Swami kept on blowing at it and blowing at it, and different forms were coming. Jesus and, all of those different forms. So, he was telling the answer, but he was saying that all the time in his mind was, probably at the end of this, Swami is going to give me that medallion. Right? So his mind was only in that, okay, Swami, when are you going to give it to me? And he says that in between, Professor Kasturi comes with some work. So he's thinking that if Professor Kasturi doesn't get it, then I'll get it. So then he goes away. And then Swami says, "Now, where did I stop? What was the last thing that you saw?" And Swami continues. And then finally Swami materializes the image of the Vishwarupa. Right? He sees that image with all the heads of Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara and all of that. And the image of Shirdi Baba and Swami on the torso of that image. So Swami asks him, "What is this?" So he says, "Swami, I'm not sure, but I've heard that they refer to this as Virata Swarupa." That's what he said. "I've heard people saying that this is the Virata Swarupa." Swami said, "Correct. This is the Virata Swarupa." And this boy is still thinking, "Swami, when am I going to get that?" And as that boy was looking, Swami said, "Yes, it is Virata Swarupa." And Swami opened his mouth wide and swallowed that thing. And Swami said, "I am that. I am all of that," Swami said. And you can imagine what was that. When you now read the discourses, when you read the Upanishad, Swami was not there to really thrill us to say that, I can do this, I can do that, I can read your mind, I can materialize. Swami was wanting us to relate to that, right? And when we were talking about Sasidhar's experience, Swami was showing everything and saying, "This is Virata and this is me." And this is probably the same reason for which Swami sent us out, say, do seva, serve people and, alleviate the suffering of people. Somewhere I think there are gaps, and hopefully going through these discourses over and over again, as Swami says, you listen, Shravanam, Mananam and Nididhyasanam, somewhere these gaps will get filled. And someday we will be able to experience that. So thank you, Pradeep sir. Thank you, Hari, for joining us as always. And dear listeners, we thank you for joining us this week. Do join us again next week too. We most humbly offer this effort at Swami's Lotus Feet. In a very short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu and Sai Prakash, and of course their guests, for the last segment of this Thursday, Nivahini Satsang. Happy listening.